So you already put up yesterday's shir. People are commenting, Kol HaKavod, you're fabulous. And I titled the next shir 3 weeks from yesterday, Russians Carrying Umbrellas on Shabbos. You'll see, you won't believe what you come up with in his sefer. And I tried to check him out. I Googled him. All I could come up with that he has a shul in Flatbush. Yeah, but I don't know who he is. The man is a Lamdin with a very interesting mind. Anyone know the name? No, no one knows the name. Harav Moshe Mandel. And I can't get any info on him. Okay, today is Monday, January 5th, 2015. And we had heavy rain yesterday. We're heading for snow. And today it's a beautiful day, cold but beautiful. So it isn't Miami Beach, but we aren't in New York either today. We're finishing out, I don't know if I'll finish entirely today, but we're finishing out a number of years of work on the history of Torah in the United States, which will continue afterwards, but on the history of Torah, particularly in what is today called Yeshiva University. And Reb Shmuel Belkin, and as I explained last week, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong, I'm just acting on my relationship with Reb Shmuel and the conclusions I reached watching him at moments where you saw the Litvisha Yeshiva boy come to the fore. But there's no question in my mind whether my description and how I contrast him with the Reb is correct or not correct. There's no question in my mind that certainly that Litvisha Yeshiva boy from Raten and from Grodno remained part of him all his life. And he always, in the 40s particularly, when he took over the yeshiva, he reshaped the institution on the level of Ritz from what was during Dr. Revel's time. He brought in many of the survivors, many of the well-known people in the United States, Torah survivors. He attempted to bring in others who turned down the invitation, such as the two Telzer Rosh Hashiva, Reb Matul Katz and Reb Elie Bloch. He attempted to get Rav Shach. In other words, his appetite to bring in as many literature as possible was a very great, deep appetite. And the Mashgiach, we spoke about Reb David Lifshitz, who becomes a key personality, and the Mashgiach, Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessin. Now, Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessin, Rabbi Belkin did not know from Europe, but the Rav knew him from Boston, and as I said last time, and just let me repeat a few words, Rav Lessin's years, to put him into context, 1889 to 1975, born in the Minsk district, studied at Slabodka, Talmid Muvhak of the Altar of Slabodka, Rav Natan Zvi Finkel. Rav Lessin never stopped breathing the air of Slabodka. He was a Rav in Europe. He remained in touch with his Rebbe. He remained in touch with Slabodka. He was involved in establishing the Kolel Hara in Slabodka. That itself is an interesting story, because due to Reb Chaim, the Litvisha, Rashi, Yeshiva, Rabbanim could no longer paskin a shaila. The minute you worked with the dialectical thinking, the minute you worked with dual viewpoints, you couldn't reach a conclusion. It can the sana say, can the sana say. And this was what happened as a result of Reb Chaim's thinking. Reb Chaim could get away with it because Reb Chaim was Reb Chaim Briska. So when he became Reb Brisk in Brest Litovsk, he made a condition that all shilas should go to the Briska Dayan, Reb Simcha Zelek. Reb Simcha Zelek was an Alta Velazhina before Reb Chaim's time, who was, as the expression goes, quoting Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, he was born before Matan Torah, referring to Matan Torah, meaning Reb Chaim's new viewpoint. And Reb Simcha Zelek knew the Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch backwards and forwards, and he was a Posek Mufak. So Reb Chaim made a tanai, I'm willing to be Rav of Brisk, but you have to bring in an Av Beit Din, the Paskin, and that was Reb Simcha Zelek. In order to alleviate the problem, after World War I, Slabodka had a Kolel Hora'ah, where they took some of the best students, including Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, to give one example, And in that kolel, they actually hora'ah. They actually worked on reaching a conclusion in paskining halacha l'maisa. And by the way, I told you many times, the Rav would have never been a posek except Boston forced him into the area of psak. In other words, America caught up with him, and the Mokum Shainish, he had the paskin. It began in Boston and afterwards carries through to the RCA, where he carried the entire burden of American psak, and at that moment in the RCA world, on his shoulders. But the Rav would have been very happy not to have been a posek. And I've told you, when I had that shaila with putting on a second mezuzah, if you're worried that the first mezuzah is pasul, and you make it tonight, if the first mezuzah is good, the second mezuzah is kishut b'alma. And if the first mezuzah is not good, then the second mezuzah is a real mezuzah. It's a sugyan menachat, itilim utelet. So the Rav said to me, plain and simple, ich kenda zen azeh. He couldn't paskin. And I sent the shayla on to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe sent me a tshuva, which appears in the first volume of Yoredeya that Rav Moshe covers. And I showed it to the Rav. I showed the Ketav Yad of Rav Moshe. It wasn't published yet, and I could see the Rav wasn't happy with it. He still couldn't accept that there was one psak. But sooner or later, you have to have a psak. Now, that kolel in Hora, Rav Lessin was one of the main pillars behind it, and he was an excellent fundraiser in Lithuania, in greater Lithuania, White Russia, parts of Poland, but in areas where there wasn't a lot of money. You'll see why this is important in a few minutes, but he was an excellent fundraiser for that kollel. Now, let me pick up. Rav Lessin, in all the years I knew him, and I knew him intimately, I have the only smicha he gave all his years in America from 39 to 75. I knew him, I was in his home, I knew him intimately. I never heard a sarcastic word about the United States. As I mentioned, Reb David Lifshitz was very different than, for the sake of argument, Reb Yeruchim Gerelek, Reb Noach Bornstein, Reb Shmuel Lazer Volk. There was a certain tragedy there that you felt in a very tangible fashion. I write about it in Washington, that Hitler not only killed 6 million Jews, but he destroyed the lives of all the survivors as well. You didn't survive without feeling that terrible loss, lo aleinu, that you're misplaced, you're in a new area, you don't belong here, you don't know the language, you don't know the culture. I never heard a negative word from Reb David Lifshitz. So if you recall, when Reb David's daughter and son-in-law participated in the class with me, so I asked Chaya, and the answer there was that Reb David was a positive person. It's not that he was at home in America, but his personality was a very positive personality. Reb Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessin, I never heard a negative word about America. But here I have something to say where I may be right, I may be wrong. Because again, I'm giving facts, but then I'm going to interpret it. Avram, why don't you move over so I can see you? You're blocked there. So I'm interpreting facts, but I believe I'm correct. If there's a psychologist here, you can think about it. You see, what was different in Reb Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessin's biography, he visited the length and breadth of America and Canada many years before he fled here. He visited in 1924. During the interbellum period. Now, the story there is very fascinating. That is the first bit of research, of serious research I ever did in my life. I want to remember, I write about it in Washington. I don't want to repeat the details now. It's a whole story. But I won a $50 bond for the best original research in Jewish history in Yeshiva College that year. It was open to juniors in Yeshiva College. There was a big machloket. I write about it. Dr. Regis didn't want to award the prize. What is this American Jewish history? There's no Jewish history in America. It's just the history of assimilation. And they had to convince some of the faculty members that there is a history. I'm writing about hope. Now, that visit to America, and I can tell you in La Kafir Aron, Volume 1, I republished the article, the 1924 Rabbinical Delegation Visit. Let me just say a few words about it. The story was very simple. With the outbreak of World War I, until World War I, the American Jewish community did not really take its role as the heartbeat of the Jewish people, responsible for the Jewish people. With World War I, you already have millions of Jews in the United States, and the various Jews have made it. You have greenhorns who have become big socialists. You have greenhorns who have become very successful Litvisha, who remained religious, or at least remained with a feeling for religion. And with the outbreak of World War I, you have three different organizations collecting money to help the Jews in Europe. You've got to remember, the Jews in Europe were caught in the battlefield, and they suffered. And when they didn't suffer during the war, they suffered because there were pogroms. If anyone's knocking, they suffered because there were pogroms. It was terrible. So you had three different groups. One group was the old-time German Jews. The other group were the socialists, and you had the religious Jews organized as well. The Central Committee for the Relief, it had a big title, for the Relief of Jews Suffering Through the War, known popularly as the Central Committee. Now, a miracle happened, and all three of these groups joined together, forming the JDC, the Joint Distribution Committee. And those of you who are Jewish and listening to this year know how hard it is for Jews to unite. I don't have to go any further than the election campaign that we're living through now. And I tell David Twesky, you owe the government another 20% of what you pay on your taxes, because the entertainment you are getting in this election is beyond belief. If it was written in a novel, you would throw the novel away. This can't be. But I don't have to elaborate what's happening, if you know the inner workings of Unzi Yitten. So it was a miracle, the JDC. The JDC just celebrated 100 years of its operation. I forget where I went. I saw a whole display of the JDC 100th anniversary. Now, following World War I and the JDC, in other words, these three different groups collected the money. Then the money was given over to the JDC, and they supported the Jews in Europe. After World War I, it not only was supporting the Jews in Europe, World War I created the start of, or strengthened, the great miracle of our existence, the Zionist movement. And after World War I, before World War I, if you became a Zionist, everyone laughed at you and said, I'm a Shuganer, he's crazy, why is he a Zionist? Who's going to build Palestine? After World War I, hundreds of thousands of Jews over the world became Zionists. There was a big Aliyah. The second Aliyah was 1904-1914, which basically is the Aliyah that shaped the basic environment of the State of Israel, although today it's been altered by the shift in population. And after World War I, there still was a tremendous aliyah, which was stopped, of course, by the British Shem Rishon Yerkov with the white paper. But now you had Torah institutions in Palestine and in Eastern Europe. And of course, they were starving. They were caught up in tremendous economic difficulty. The JDC did what it could, and the JDC has a tremendous record of helping Jews over the world. They've had some very prominent Orthodox Jews work for them, including Rabbi Schwartz, who was a graduate of Yeshiva Shripitz Kochanan from Baltimore, had very prominent Jews working for them, for Rabbi Greenbaum, who I knew personally, and these people, they did wonders. But you need money. So the Central Relief came up with the idea, in order to raise money, you have to bring a rabbinical delegation to the United States. Remember, we Jews, we spoke about it yesterday in Shir with the whole concept of the Erev. We Jews have a Torah Shebachtav, a Torah Shebaalpeh. And Torah Shebaalpeh is carried by rabbinical figures. If a Rav is a giant of Torah and you're at Shemayim and Chesed, this is what keeps the Jewish people going. I don't have to go further. When you see a Reb Moshe Feinstein, you see a Reb Avdya Yosef, you see a Lubavitcher Rebbe, this is what keeps the Jewish people going. So, and you had in America over 1 million, on to 2 million already, maybe more than 2 million, East European Jews. And even if they were assimilating, even with the second generation, the third generation, but I'll take my father, Zichron Levracha, as an example. He was second generation American, born in Harlem, no religious education to speak of. There were no day schools, nothing, or very little, just what he saw at home. But he had tremendous derech eretz for Rabbanim, and understand that feeling was there. Now, who do you bring to America? So the rabbinical delegation zeroed in on three people. One, of course, the most famous was Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, the chief rabbi of the Jewish community, the Ashkenazic Jewish community in Palestine. In addition to Rav Cook, the Rosh Yeshiva of Slabodka, Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the Levush Mordechai. He was very well known. He was one of the top Voloshin graduates. He was younger than his older brother-in-law. At least I believe he was younger. Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was not as well known, although Rabbi Zalman Meltzer outlived him. And the third person was the Kovner Rav, Rav Avram Dovber Kahana Shapiro. Now, just a few words about the Kovner Rav. Again, I wrote a monograph about him. It appears in Rechafet Aaron, I believe, Chelek Aleph. The Kovner Rav, Rav Avram Dovber Kahana Shapiro, was a Gaon Adir, was a Voloshin graduate. Kovner was the most prominent rabbinic position in Eastern Europe. So you'll ask right away, why not Vilna? Vilna never had a chief rabbi. The Vilna Gaon, in his lifetime, Rav Shmuel was the chief rabbi. When Rav Shmuel died, there was tremendous machloket who would succeed him. And the community of Vilna made a takana, a cherim, that there would never be a chief rabbi again. There would be a beitin and a beitin and members of the beitin. They would run the city. They would pass in shilas, but no chief rabbi. It's like certain shuls, when there's big machlokes over the rabbi, you notice a year, 2 years, 3 years, they have no new rabbi. When I left Maplewood, when I was re-elected to my first position, Balakinwood, by 9 to 7, I think it was, or 11 to 9, whatever, you got to read, I told you, Charlie Liebman's article. So for a year or two, there was no rabbi who succeeded me. There's a shul, I don't want to mention names, because they're caught up, but they had a very bad experience, had a very so-called prominent rabbi, and a big scandal, lo aleinu, and they're not in any rush. It's already a year and a half have gone by, and there's no new rabbi yet, to the best of my knowledge. So they have no rabbi in Vilna. But Kovner, Kaunas, was the second biggest community. And that was the most preeminent position. Prove to me I'm right. Avram, prove to me I'm right. Who was Rav in Kovner? Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spekta. You don't have to go any further. The biggest posek of East European Jewry, the most famous rabbi, the yeshiva is named after him. Every immigrant to America heard the name Rav Yitzchak Chanan. He was Rav of Kovna. So the Rav Avram Dovber Kahana Shapiro, I believe he succeeded Rav Yitzchak Chanan. I don't think there was anyone in between them. He was a giant of Torah, the Deva Avraham. But there's something else interesting about him. He was very open-minded. He already had appreciation for general knowledge, general culture, for university. He was very unique in that respect. I can tell you, when I published my monograph originally on the Deva Avraham, on the Kovner Rav, so there was a letter to the editor from someone I knew. He was an old Telzer, and he worked for Feldheim, as I recall, the original Feldheim. And he wrote a letter that Rothkopf doesn't know what he's talking about. He hated yeshiva, what he wrote about. I don't want to repeat over what he wrote about the Kovner Rav. I couldn't understand it. How does he write that? Later in life, when I did more research and more research, I understood already, Jason, what's involved. That he already was broad, that it's like here in Israel, we want the Tochnit Libar, a core curriculum. So a right-winger right away placed him Mechutz L'Tchum. But these people were very famous, very well known, and the idea was that they would influence the Jews to give more money and more money. They announced a $1 million campaign. Now, $1 million, 1924 money, is like talking today a campaign for $100 million. It's $1 million, wow. And each great Torah personality brought with him an assistant who aided him in America. Gentlemen, Reb Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessin was the right hand of the Levush Mordechai. And he saw America. They arrived, Battery Hall, New York, that day, big reception. They all spoke. They were presented with the key to the city of New York. Rav Kook spoke in Hebrew. He was chief rabbi of Palestine. He created Zionism, created the most attention around him, attracted, wow, Rav Kook is here. And he spoke, and he spoke in Hebrew. Why am I stressing he spoke in Hebrew? He knew English too. He had been rabbi in London. Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein translated afterwards for the mayor into English. So it's reported that Rav Kook said he didn't understand me entirely. In other words, Rav Kook's English was better than Rabbi Goldstein's Hebrew. But that's off the cuff. You can write history without telling that story, because Rabbi Goldstein was a great individual. But you can understand it, that Rav Kook's English was better than Rabbi Goldstein's Hebrew. Then they stayed in a hotel. Then they were put up by Harry Schiff in one of his mansions. And they traveled. That was their base. Ellie, did you get my message? I called you. I hope I called you and you didn't answer. Left the phone. We were trying to establish the name of a student. You were right. I was confused. The last name was correct. You led the lead, okay? You were absolutely right. Now, so later they stayed with Schiff, and they traveled to Detroit. They traveled to Philadelphia. And they traveled to Montreal. Wherever there was a large Jewish community with generous people, Montreal had the Drazen family. They brought the Gedolim, and Rav Lessin saw all of America. Now, let me go one step further and take you to the world of Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessin. You know, in life, you hear certain drushot, certain insights. All right, I've heard in my life, I'll talk about myself, I heard in my life, I wouldn't say much, a good few 100,000 drushot. Some that I've given, foolish drushes that I've given, and drushes that Gedolei Yisrael gave. There are a number of drushes that remain in my mind that shape my entire Torah gestalt. From the Rav and from Rav Lessin. From the Rav, I allude to one drusha, Shlichut Adam, where the Rav speaks about Shlichut. You don't know what God wants out of you in this world, and never think you've accomplished that, your Shlichut. That became such a guiding spirit for me. When I look back at that, the 77 years that the Kadosh Baruch Hu has privileged me to live and breathe Torah, it, Rav Lessin, I'll never forget this as long as I live for eternity. He told the story about his trip to America, and the fact that he could tell this and turn it into a misavart, he told the story. They were on the east side originally in a hotel for the first few weeks. So the first Shabbat, they come out of the hotel to go to Davin in the Beis Medrash HaGadol. And they come out of the hotel accompanied by Balabatim, who came to take them, to greet them, to lead them. And they see Jews with pushcarts on Shabbos selling. They were flabbergasted. They were shocked. In Europe, even if there was Chilul Shabbos, but if the Kovner Rav, if the Levush Mordechai came walking along, you hid. You know, I had the experience in Maplewood, where I had a lot of Jews who had moved out of Newark who yet knew a little bit about Yiddishkeit, a little bit. So I always loved the story I'm walking home from Shul Shabbos, and this guy is pulling out of his driveway. He sees me from the side of his eye. He jumps out of the car and he starts picking flowers. You understand? So now I asked you, which was a bigger Issa? Driving a car? That's so simple. Or picking flowers? I'm not so simple. But here, the pushcarts, the vendors, they were stripped. Rabbi Yaakov Moshe, the Rebbe, my Mashkiach, was shocked, was flabbergasted. He felt sick. You see something like that, you feel sick. The next week they came out, they felt a little sick. The third week they came out, and they walked right by the pushcarts. And the Lubush Mordechai turned around. He was from Slabodki, he was from a Muslim yeshiva, a Muslim environment. The Lubush Mordechai turned around and said, Mizayin alle Kandidaten for Chilul Shabbos. We are all candidates for Chilul Shabbos. If we can see this Chilul Shabbos and it doesn't bother us, there's something the matter with our religious constellation. We are candidates. And I never forgot that. I tell you, I don't want to embarrass anyone, but I've often asked students, tell me, does it bother you when you're walking on the street in Jerusalem and a Jew turns on the motor of his car? Does it bother you? Okay. I suffer. There are other people who are, oh, democracy. Amishayim Shabbos, he can be Machalal Shabbos, freedom of choice, we don't want to coerce anyone. The Hartman viewpoint, let the buses run on the Sabbath, why should we coerce anyone? What are we? We're a Jewish state, we're a Jewish people. Chol Yisrael Areivim Zeh LaZeh. This is not America, this is not Britain. A British person, an English person lives on one level, his personal level. Nothing else matters. We live on two levels. We have dual responsibility. We're individuals, and we're part of Amcha, Klal Yisrael, etc. I can't go further, or I can talk on this point for the rest of the year, but I'll never forget that. Now, I want you to know that's a meridik vort from the Mashkiach. I never forgot that. Mizayin alle Kandidaten for Chilul Shabbos. Let me go just one step further, and then I'll open it if you wish. I heard the same vort many years later. You all know the story of the Shanghai crowd. So Reb Chatzkul Levenstein was in Shanghai. He later becomes Mashgiach of Mir and Panovich. By the way, you should know, after World War II, they brought him to America to be Mashgiach in Mir. He couldn't stand America. It's interesting. He stayed a year and a half, and he came to Panovich, came to Bnei Brak. Reb Chatzkul Levenstein, they're talking giants of Musa. And Reb Henoch Fishman told me, I'll never forget it, and he didn't know the story of the Mashgiach, but I put it together, that when they were in Shanghai, so they would come out to go to shul in the morning, to go learn in the Beit Aron synagogue. The whole story is miraculous, how there was the shul that was built by an intermarried Iraqi, and he built it with 410 seats, and it just... Every seat was filled with a Shanghai refugee, and no one knew why he built the shul, because there was basically no need for it. So they go out of the building where they were sleeping, and they're dead Chinese on the street. People died of starvation every night. The street cleaners would come along and sweep up the bodies. So the first time they walked out, they were flabbergasted, they were shocked, they were sick, they threw up. You see dead bodies, it's not a pleasant sight. Second week, they were sick a little, shocked a little. The third week, they jumped over the bodies very gingerly. And the Mashgiach gave a talk, Mizayin alle Reitzchen. We are murderers. If we can become used to seeing dead bodies on the street, we are murderers. Meridik. Magnificent. This is the Mashgiach. This is Moria Rebbe Rav Lessin. This is Reb Chatzkul Levenstein. This is Musa. This is America. He saw the length and breadth of America. There were no shocks for him when he came back in 1939. Yes, Ellie.
Just in terms of what Rebbe was saying, you don't believe the story, just not exactly. that we should have legislation, religious legislation in the...
No, no, I don't. Unfortunately, I don't believe it. But if it doesn't bother you, there's something the matter with you. No, we should have legislation. I'm going to talk about it in the context of one of the talks that he asked me to give in Florida. There's a public thoroughfare and a private thoroughfare. On a public thoroughfare, our only right to this land is that we're the continuity of the Jewish people. If not, we're murderers. We didn't have a right to shoot one Arab. They had every right to shoot us and drive us into the sea. You follow? Ask Avraham Burg. He just drove on Shabbos to Natseret to become a member of Chadash. It's beyond comprehension what great Jews, what comes out of children. Those of you that are fathers and so on are sitting here with four children, you should know. Everyone asks my wife, how did you raise such lovely children? And the answer is very simple. You have to pray and the rest is mazel. You can give the best chinuch. You saw in Friday's Yediyot, you saw the article, I couldn't get over it on this, but I know the family, this Belze Hasidish family, well-placed, the father, the mother, and eight children left Yiddishkeit altogether. The Rebbe is not Beseder, see, a chassid has a different concept. I have a concept. What does my Yiddishkeit have to do? I'm a Jew. So this Rav is scandalous, so the heck with him, he's a phony. But I don't leave Yiddishkeit. They left Yiddishkeit altogether. Happened with Rav Shach. You remember when he established Shevet Yisrael and he brings in Moskowitz, the biggest expert in Kashrut. He knows more than the whole Eidah Charei did. Believe me, I don't eat from a Shevet Yisrael Heksha if I can avoid it. A can of peas, I'll eat from their Heksha, but not beyond that. And Moskowitz, within the 2 years, he, his family, totally left Yiddishkeit. And he went to Haifa, the kids, no beards, no payas, no nothing. Secular education. You know what a secular education is? I spoke about it yesterday. Those of you who weren't here, hear the tape. My encounter with Reb Nassim Sharansky on Friday night. I mean, he opened his mouth. He didn't realize the depth of what he is saying. The depth. Someone growing up in the refused community in Russia knew more about Yiddishkeit than a third generation North Tel Aviv person getting a chinuch, the Chuldai, the mayor of Tel Aviv, let all the stores be open in Shabbos, and this man was a high school principal. I don't want to say another word, I'll get sick. That's it. Quiet. Back here. So, no, I'm not in favor, but the public thoroughfare has to be Jewish, otherwise we're murderers. That he has a right to drive his car, unfortunately, what can I do? I live in two worlds. One world is Torah, and one world is the beautiful humanism, democracy, liberalism, and every other phony fakery that we were taught as we grew up. And take a look what's happening in France. It's still going to be an Islamic Republic. Hashem Yirachem on France, and let's hope that Britain doesn't follow afterwards. People are shaking. And Holland, it's beyond words. Did they succeed in raising $1 million? No. But they did raise 400,000. And for the 20s, it saved the yeshiva, both in Israel, Palestine at that time, in Eastern Europe. It was a very hefty sum. 1939, Rav Lessin gets to America. I always thought he got to America. He was working for Slabodka, raising funds. His daughter claims he ran away to America because he got to America in 1939. He was spared from the Holocaust. Two children survived. One, a son, who later becomes a rabbi in New York. I'll give you the names later. I'll give you a source. And one is a daughter who was married to Rabbi Avigdor Miller. All his other children, all his siblings, his wife perished in the Holocaust. And your humble servant stands in awe how this man, with so much loss, so much heartache, how they could go further and go further with a smile. You never heard a negative word from the Mashiach. He always sought out the good in people. A Baal Chesed she'en kedugmatam. But before I come back to Rav Lesson, I want to sidetrack now and go into his son-in-law, Rav Avigdor Miller. All of you know the name Rabbi Avigdor Miller. When I was growing up, his father-in-law was the Mashgiach of Ritz, and Rav Avigdor Miller was the Mashgiach of Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. And, you know, we still, the chasm wasn't as deep then as it is today. I know it's hard for you to comprehend today what goes on in Torah Vadas and Chaim Berlin is of no interest to you. It's like YU is a world unto itself, Chaim Berlin and Torah Vadas are a world unto themselves, Satma is a world unto itself, Bavav is a world unto itself. Lubavitch already is more of an octopus. It's all over the place. But that's Lubavitch. We'll come to it, Be'ezrat Hashem. All of next term will be devoted to Lubavitch. But we knew what was going on. And like we would talk about, oh, Rav Miller, my friend goes to Chaim Berlin. This is what Rav Miller had to say. And we would occasionally ask the Mashgiach if he heard this part from his son-in-law, you know, Mashgiach. To great pride. And Rabbi Avigdor Miller is a fascinating example of Baal Musa who winds up in Slabodka and carries with him the heritage of Slabodka to the United States, to Brooklyn. Now, Rabbi Avigdor Miller, put him into context, he was born in 1908. He died in 2001, so he lived 92 years, he had a Aretha Jamim, although considering how long my mother lived, he should have lived a few more years. His mind was perfect till the day he died, even as his body faded away. He attended public school in Baltimore. There were no day schools. That's where he was born. Went to Talmud Torah after public school, which was the norm at the time. And he later studied privately with the Lubavitcher Chassid. This Lubavitcher Chassid was supposed to be paid by the Talmud Torah in which Rabbi Miller had studied and simply graduated. He knew more than the other students. He was a better student, had a better mind. And they arranged private lessons. And of course, the Talmud Torah did not have the money to pay the Chassid. His own family did not have the money, but the Lubavitcher Chassid never stopped teaching the young Rabbi Avigdor Miller, and Rabbi Miller always spoke about him with warmth and gratitude that he didn't take a salary, but taught with Mesirat Nefesh. To a certain extent, it is exactly what the Rav would talk about when he would talk about the cheder he went to, the Chabad cheder in Chaslovich, his Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Riesberg, and the Rav would wax elegant talking about what he gained from that exposure. I write about it, I quote Rebbe in the Rav, the world of, and Rav Avigdor Miller, similarly on that level with the love for Lubavitch. Turned a little older, went to yeshiva college, went to Ritz, got smicha from the yeshiva, graduated from yeshiva college, learned b'chavruta with Reb Moshe Bick. Reb Moshe Bick then had come to the United States in the mid-20s. His father went with the title Mezbet Sharav. It was a Meshbetz family. They were not Hasidim, but in Meshbetz there always was a tradition of a Rebbe and a Rav. And the Bick family were in the rabbinate in Meshbetz. His father was a prominent Rav. His uncle was a prominent Rav in Brooklyn. And Moshe Bick, one of the leading students of Ritz. And he learned B'chavruta with Rav Avigdor Miller. Now, In Reeds, there was a whole cadre of students who would later become very famous in what you call the right-wing world or the art scroll world. They went and learned Bechavruta with Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman. Name mean anything to you? All for the boss. All for the boss, Rabbi Herman, I yet knew his children, a good part of his family. This was so unique in the United States of America, a family that remained totally frum, like the Tarrigan family. At that time, the 20s into the 30s, it was unheard of, you understand. Today, everyone is frum. Whether they're really frum or just monkeys putting on tefillin is a different question. But everyone is observant. If you're showing the Shabbos and whatnot, etc. In jail today, a book has already been written, How to Keep Shabbos and Kashrut in Jail in the United States. There's a book I saw with my own eyes. I couldn't believe my eyes. But Baruch Hashem, they need it for those that are incarcerated. And they went to learn with Rabbi Miller, with Rabbi Herman. Among the good friends was Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. This was all part of that same Chabura. The early 30s, Reb Yitzchak Isaac Shea, Slabutka Rosh Yeshiva, the son-in-law of the Alta, the son-in-law of Reb Nassim Tzvi, visited America to raise funds for Slabutka. Got back to Europe, and they told him in Europe, you didn't succeed, you brought back so little. He says, no, I did succeed. I picked up a student in America who I convinced to come to Slabutka. And that young man was Avigdor Miller. And he remains in Slabutka. He came to Slabutka in 1932, 24 years of age. In 1935, Reb Yitzchak Isaac Sher introduced him to the daughter, Ethel Lesson, the daughter of Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson. They married. That's what saved her life afterwards. 1938, Nazism is rising, and he realizes he has to leave Europe, goes to the American consul in Kaunas, in Kovna, and unbelievable, the American consul working for the State Department was his classmate in high school. And he immediately, generally the Americans, their share in killing Jews shouldn't be forgotten either. What was that book called? The St. Louis, etc., etc. Their share in killing Jews should not be forgotten either. So the American consul immediately arranged for Rav Miller, his wife, children. They got out just in time. Came to America, and he became Rav in Chelsea, Massachusetts. How do you pronounce it? How do you pronounce it? Chelsea is the way it's written, but I've heard people spell Chelsea. That's why I'm asking. You're from New England, yeah? No. Chelsea? Yeah, I have to say that it's written Chelsea, but I always heard people say Chelsea, Massachusetts. He became Rav. There was an Orthodox shul there. His father was in Boston at the time, not that far away, in a greenhorn shul, East European immigrants. And at first the Balabatim were overwhelmed by this Rabbi Miller. He's so frum, he makes demands upon us. But they learned to love him as time passed on. In 1944, when Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson comes to the yeshiva, as Mashkiach to Reeds, Rav Yitzchak Kutner brings Rabbi Avigdor Miller to be Mashkiach in Chaim Berlin. Now, Rav Yitzchak Kutner was a very fascinating personality. A lot has been written about him. Probably the best monograph on Rav Kutner is by Hillel Goldberg. It originally appeared in Tradition, and afterwards, from Slabutka to Berlin, I think the book is called Hillel Goldberg, Rabbi Dr. Hillel Goldberg, who was a YU Musmach, a late bloomer, as he calls himself. I think he became frum in Boston, the Boston Rebbe, when he was in college, And he became a Talmud of the Rav and a Talmud of the Mashgiach, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen. He's a fine Talmud Chacham, Shlomo Goldberg, lives in Denver, runs the family newspaper, and he wrote a wonderful, insightful article on Rav Hutna. And Rav Hutna, just in parentheses, an interesting individual, be great mind, loved by the Soloveitchik family, hired by Rav Moshe Soloveitchik when he goes to America and his family is still in Warsaw. He's hired by Rav Moshe to teach Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who's still a youngster, not yet bar mitzvah. He was bar mitzvah under the tutelage of Rav Hutna. His father is in America. And Rav Hutna, who had been a Talmid, becomes a Talmid of Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. And then he moves more and more right and more into a Hasidic mold, more of a Rebbe than a Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva. A fascinating story. But he brought Rabbi Miller to Chaim Berlin, where Rabbi Miller remains for the next 21 years. In addition to coming to Chaim Berlin, he becomes the rabbi of the Yisrael of Rugby in 1975, with the neighborhood changing. He establishes the Beit Yisrael of Rugby Torah Center on Ocean Parkway in Flatbush, which he remained at until his death. Now, Rabbi Miller was an American. He had a fabulous command of English. I can compare him. There's a Rebbe in, there's a Rosh Yeshiva in Reitz, Rabbi Aaron Kahn. How many of you have studied with Rabbi Aaron Kahn? No? If I say he has a fabulous command of English, wow. Unbelievable, unbelievable. Rabbi Lamb met him, it's a whole story, and he heard this guy speak. He thought he's a YU person, and he brought him to YU. It's not exactly YU, his hashkafas are a little to the right of YU, I'm told. But he must be a good Rebbe, because I've had students who love him. I've been at weddings of students, and I saw the relationship. So Baruch Hashem, we don't have to have every Rebbe thinking the same way. That's the beauty of YU. Freedom of choice, what Eli asked me about. That freedom of choice I have no problem with. So Rabbi Miller was a fabulous orator. Superb command of English. A tremendous individual, a bar mitzvah, someone you could admire. It is said, I find it hard to believe, that for more than 60 years when he came back to America, he slept on a board, not on a regular bed. A balmusa, don't allow your ta'avot, your desires to control you. Sleep on a regular bed. Eat simple food. Life is more important. I understand when he hit 70, this is what I'm told, people would invite him to weddings, to Britot, to Smachot, and he said, I'm busy getting ready for the big trip. I don't have time to come. And what he was referring to is, you go to Olam Haba, quoting the Gemara, Ashrei mi shebalakan v'talmudo biyado. And I can understand Rabbi Miller 1,000,000%. It is said that in Slabodka, during the summer, he wore an overcoat, because he didn't want anyone to see all the patches on the suit that he had underneath. He was not an Olam Hazenik. His insight, his lectures, which have become world famous, which is an institution unto itself today, where you can buy thousands and thousands of these little CDs, I think there are over 2,000 lectures of his, are fabulous. He published endless books on Jewish history, Jewish thought. Some of you are very well familiar with the books. I'll give you one insight I want to quote, and I thank my Talmud, Rabbi Aryeh Lieberman of Crown Heights, for when I mentioned Rabbi Miller, he knows what I'm looking for. So I give you one little insight, you'll see the godlet of Rabbi Miller. A small example, this is from one of his recordings. He gets the following question. What kind of honor can you give a mother-in-law who interferes? All right? this is a problem that many of us face, many of us have. I can give you endless, endless examples. This is a big question. What to do with a mother-in-law? The answer is, it's not the full answer, but it's an important answer. What would you do if you were a mother-in-law? And probably it wasn't, it wouldn't be much different. And you understand, you see, quoting the Rav now in the, one of the Meiridik, insightful philosophic lectures he gave was the first Yahrzeit of Tanya, Rebbetzin Tanya. And he planned to give a talk at Stern College for the women. And he developed a talk for them. And then so many people said they're coming, they had to move it to Lamport Auditorium. Now that talk has been written up. It's in Family Redeemed, the first book of the Torah Torah Foundation. And the guy named Rakefet quotes part of that talk in the Rav. And Rakefet's quotes are not in the manuscript published in Family Redeemed. So in Washington, Rakefet explains why. It's very, very interesting. They worked from manuscript, and I worked from the tape. And when the Rav ad-libbed, they didn't catch it. I caught it. And if you knew the Rav, when he took off his glasses and wasn't reading from the manuscript and ad-libbed, those were the most important moments of any lecture, because that's when his heart spoke. The facade was gone. So that explains what I have and they don't have, but not for now. So the Rav went into the whole difference between a father and a mother. A father's goal in life, father is a teacher. His goal in life is to see his son succeed, to see his child succeed, to see his child stand on his or her own two feet. Father's greatest nachat, the son is out of the house, he's conquering the world, that's a father's nachat. Marries, has a family, a mother, it's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Rebbe would quote the Gemara with Shlomo HaMelech, Bat Sheva would say, Ba bitni, when she rebuked her son for sleeping late, for getting involved with that Egyptian princess, Ba bitni, that you were once part of me, you were in my body. A mother finds it infinitely harder to make her peace with the fact that the son has left home, has fled the nest, that the child has moved on. It's very hard for a mother. That's why the Mishnah says, in Yevamot, Chazaka, Sonut Zulazu, I don't want to interpret it. It's a terrible, terrible Mishnah. But it's true. That's life. A mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. Very difficult relationship. So here this woman is asking Rabbi Miller, what honor can you give a mother-in-law? You're chayev, it's your husband's mother. You have to consider the mother-in-law's possessing certain rights, certain privileges, and you have to suffer from her. That's part of the job of living in this world. And if you get along with your mother-in-law in this world, you have to know you are going to get a tremendous reward. That's part of a marriage, and that's part of a, and that's a process of smoothing out your character. Lots of mother-in-laws are not at peace with themselves. That's an important subject, to learn how to live with yourself, to be happy, not to be dissatisfied, not to look for faults in life. People who have acquired a happy attitude are going to get along with others much more readily than dissatisfied and complaining people. I have to tell you, this man is very, very insightful. And Ein Hachinami, I've seen mothers get together, discuss their children, big children, their daughters-in-law, and I don't know, sometimes I have the feeling they only see the blemishes. They don't see the beauty, the good. And I remain in debt both to my Rebbe Rav Lesser and to the little bit I picked up over the years from Rabbi Miller, this is a healthy, wonderful, magnificent attitude. Now, on one level, I have a problem with Rabbi Miller, and that's the level of his attitude towards Zionism. It is rumored, and I've heard tapes of his, that he wrote the advertisements that Satmar would put into the New York Times, the original advertisements on Yom HaTzmut. The English was atrocious. Why did the New York Times allow them to put in English that's atrocious? Now that, you got a very simple answer. The New York Times enjoyed seeing frum Jews make fools of themselves. Pay them a fortune for a quarter-page ad, a half-page ad, and poor English. So evidently the word went back to Satmar that such an English pasnished for the New York Times. And if you want to influence people across the world that people like Rakefet are not Jews, people with a kippah shruga are a Amalek, put it into good English. And it is rumored, I don't know if it can be substantiated, that the yeds were later written. But it was substantiated later that the yeds were written by Rav Avigdor Miller. And there's a fault line. I heard him, where he discussed Golda Meir and Ben-Gurion. And I have a lot to say on the topic, and I will make the claim very proudly that if you go back in time and pick up my Shayurim on Zionism given in a place called the Gris Kollel of Yeshiva University, you will be able to answer anyone who attacks the religious Zionist position with sources from Chazal. And absolutely, the Besorah of returning home to the land of Israel had to come about through Herzl and BG and Golda Meir, people who had thrown religion away, because had it come about from good pious Jews, the Jews would have never listened. And there's a Medrash Rabbah, a Shmot Rabbah, that says this exact thought why Moshe Rabbeinu had to be raised in the house of Paro. So we have a miracle had it. Remember, I went into the great Rabbanim who predated Herzl. Man, everyone laughed at them. Herzl came along, an assimilated Jew, a wealthy Jew, a man who has money, his family had a big business of furniture, Hungary, wow, whatnot. Whoa, he's giving us a message from the house of Paro. And you have to understand, it's kimma, it's a whole process. To be cynical and sarcastic and negative is very easy. But to build what we have achieved here, miracle of miracles. And one time when I was younger and I got involved in dialogue, today I don't waste time, but I got involved in dialogue with non-Zionist elements. Why, hey, here, why do we say Hallel and hey, here? What miracle happened here? Chanukah, a miracle happened on that day. Purim, a miracle happened on that day. What happened on Hayyia? What happened on Hayyia? The biggest miracle that ever happened in the on to 70 years history of the state of Israel. No? Tell me what happened on Hayyia. That the prime minister of the state of Israel had the guts, the courage, the backbone to spit in the face of the State Department of the United States. Shame Rishon Yerkov. Right or wrong? Would Netanyahu have declared a state if the State Department said no? Would Barak have declared a state? Think for one minute. What we have today, the moratorium on building in Eretz Yisrael. Think for one minute where we're at. The greatest miracle happened on Hayya, that BG had the guts to be machriz on a Jewish and democratic state known as Medinat Yisrael. Okay. Now, 1944, the Mashgiach comes to the yeshiva, and he remains associated with Reitz, Yeshiva University, to till the day of his death. As I mentioned last week, in his prime, there wasn't a class in yeshiva that he didn't visit once a term to give a mitzvah shmuis. When he came into the Rav Shir, the Rav sat there and listened to Echad Meichad Talmidim. Rav Lessen had brilliant insight. He was Bucky in Shas. He was Bucky in Tanakh. He had a wide realm of knowledge. Ultimately, he was to publish 8 different Svarim, 3 on Tanakh, 5 on Chazal, filled with Musar insight of an extraordinary mind. And the fact that he could organize it and put it together. And here I have good news. Rabbi Reuben asked last week, why don't we arrange for the republication of these 8 Svarim? I happen to own all 8, I believe, all with a personal hakdashah from the Mashgiach. My student Aryeh Liebman informed me they are all on Hebrew books and you can downprint any sefer from start to finish. Orach Chaim, the first sefer, is on Torah. Derech Chaim, 2 volumes on Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Hama'asha b'Torah, 5 volumes, is on Chazal. And these Svarim, and I'll elaborate in a minute, all are with a Musa Decher. That's the word in Yiddish. It's Decher. It's to listen, but to listen deeply and understand.
Has any of it been translated?
English, as far as I know, not. As far as I know, not. Now, Derech HaChaim, which was published in 1947, and Sichat Musarit Pinyanei Yida Midot V'dak Torah on Pashiyot HaTorah. So one second. Orach Chaim I have here first, Orach Chaim. So then maybe the first 2 volumes are on Torah, and it's the 3rd volume, Derech HaChaim number 2, that is on Nach. What's amazing is, and here's the dedication page, Mugdish l'seifa ha'nishama ha'kadosha ch'neregu ha'natsim yimach shmam. My dear wife, Bela Rachel bat Reb Eber. My son Shmuel Nissen, my son Avraham Yitzchak, my daughter Sarah Rivka. So out of 5 children, only 2 survived. My brother Yitzchak with his family, my sister Sarah Rachel, my sister Chesha with her family, my sister Devorah with her family. Evidently, one sister did not have children. So look what the man lost. Hashem Yikom Damam. And yet, we have to go further. We have to go further. In the introduction to this sefer, he says something meridic. Again, it had deep influence on my way of thinking. I hold it to be absolutely true. He begins the introduction and he says, what's the difference between drush to musa? You all know drush. We've heard many drushot in our life. What's the difference? And he says very succinctly, what is, and it's amazing because I heard this thought, not in all its glory, only about drush. Herbert S. Goldstein, Rabbi Goldstein, when I studied homiletics with him. What is drush? Drush is very simple. Rakefet has an idea. I'll make fun of myself. I don't mention, but you can think about the Rav. You have an idea. You want to express the idea. Fine. I have a certain point of view on Zionism, the example I just gave you. So I'm going to say what I want to say. But I'm a Talmud of the Rav. It's not nice I should say something without quoting a Chazal. Didn't the Rav tell us? What's the difference between you young men and conservative rabbis? Conservative rabbis also wear kippah. You know, in those days, conservative rabbis also observe Shabbat to a certain degree. What's the difference? that when you speak in public, you have to quote Torah Shebaal Peh. This is Yiddishkeit. This is Mesorah. This is what I spoke about yesterday. So, Rakever has an idea. He wants to find a Chazal that backs up his idea. So, you will find a Chazal, and you'll twist it a little, you'll dashen it, but then you'll get up and speak, and you'll quote a Gemara, you'll quote a Medrash Rabbah, and you'll deliver an idea, you'll quote a Medrash from Shir HaShirim, and wow, your idea comes across beautifully, and you have support. Yeah, but which came first? The idea or the text, the peg upon which you hung your hat? The idea came first. This is my viewpoint. This is my hashkafa. This is the idea I want to convey. And then you look around. Give me some sources that hang my hat on. Musa, Rav Leslie says, you're blank. Your mind is totally blank. Like a blackboard that no one has written on. You look at the Chumash, you look at the Navi, you look at Chazal, and you say, what does this concept demand out of me? It's not the Chazal interpreting your thought, but you're taking the Chazal and seeing what message, what guidance you can derive from it to influence your life. And I couldn't get over that introduction, those words. I studied it years and years and years ago. But wow, as I grew older, as I heard Shehurim, as I heard Drashot, he hit the nail on the head. And I'm guilty of it, I have to admit. I have an idea. I don't want to get up and speak prost. I don't know how to say that in English. You can, no, Yitzchak, give me a translation.
You want to be cavalier.
Cavalier, I know, prost, prost.
It must be something else, but in the context.
Right, right. Knulish threaten prost. I need a few chazal. I got to show I learned. But first comes my idea. Then I admit, and I have to say, the Rav is giving drashot. I'm in good company. I'm in good company. The Rav is given drashot, and he's taking a chazal, and he builds upon it. Remember, we dealt with the Gemara in Psachim, with putting the cup of wine after Havdalah into the refrigerator for the Kiddush of next week. Remember that? What you did, and the Gemara, and the Rav, forgetting the actual Gemara, he reversed it. But it's Dashanut. Out of that Gemara, he gave a whole drasha on Kedusha. He needed a peg on which to hang his hat. So he took that Gemara. That's Drush. Musa was fundamental for me. What does the concept demand of me? What this is Musa? What does God want out of you? What does it mean to be a Ben Torah, to be a human being, to learn in Slavutka? What does God have taught them? And then he continues, and he goes into a number of basic points that characterize Slabatka, characterize the Alta, and characterize Rav Lesson. Point number one, that you have to recognize yourself, who you are, the strength in what you can do, the kochat ha-nefesh in a human being. Simple, humble people, who are we? And yet you can conquer the world spiritually. You can conquer the world. You can be a living example of an oiska abed mensch. Again, hard to translate. These are oiska abed that you worked on yourself. You become a ben Torah. Your whole essence elevated, different. And this, of course, is part of Slabatka, Musa, Shikat L'Tadam. Slabatka, you look at the pictures today, Slabatka, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, the latest fashions, beautiful clothes, times. Clean shaven. Remember the Masoret Moshe when my Talmud goes to Reb Moshe and asks him for Haskamah on his Sefer that you're not allowed to shave, you have to have a beard. The Sefer, if I recall, over 500 pages. It's a Talmud of mine. Then he left my you went very right. Fine, you're entitled. Freedom of choice. And Reb Moshe was hysterical. How can you write a Sefer like this? How can you say such things? Motzi Laz. On endless Gedolei Yisrael, they didn't allow you to grow a beard in Slabak. They didn't allow you to grow a beard in Telz. They didn't. You didn't have a beard in Rotten. You didn't grow a beard until you married, became a Rav of a Shtot, became a Rebbe, became a Rosh Yeshiva. Whoever heard of a youngster having a beard? Today in Gris Kollel, the only one who doesn't have a beard is the Rebbe. Everyone else, Baruch Hashem. It's a different world. But why the cloth? See, that was indicative. Gadlut Adam. You dress beautifully, you're handsome, you take a haircut, you have a little below it. The Hasidic Rabban could never make their peace with the little Shi Yeshiva. That's why they told Reb Moshe Chevroni when they came to look over the land, where to open the branch of Slabatka, they said, don't open it in Jerusalem. They'll laugh you out of here. The Yeshiva Yashan will declare you up because to the 10th power. Go to Hebron. That's Hebron. It's a Chabad city. Chabad is more open-minded. They won't declare you up because you don't have beards and payas and you dress so beautifully and wear ties. And that's how the branch of Slabatka wound up in Hebron. And that, of course, gives birth to the 1929 massacre. But you see, this is, then if you heard, I'm not going to go into any more detail on this level, it'll take us the rest of the year, but if you heard the Musa Shmus, if you read the Musa Shmus and the Avot, the whole machloket today of Govainayim, how do you view Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Avot, and everyone is looking and finding fault and criticizing the Avot, they were the greatest Jews that ever lived. That's why if they made a slight mistake, it was viewed so strictly. But Gadlut Adam, we have to learn from them. Ah, and then is the second point, that if you're a Musanik, you have to be concerned not just with yourself. Chovat Adam HaShalem Kimo Kainly he's a hair, but tachlatazi harut bikvodam kufam umamonam shel chaveiro. And this was Musa, to be concerned with the other person. To be concerned the world does not circle you. You have to be concerned with the other person. That's Musa. That was Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. That's Reb Yisrael walking to shul, the famous story, Kol Nidre Night, and he hears this little baby crying because his parents went off to the shul and they can't begin davening because Reb Yisrael has not arrived, and they send out scouts, where is Reb Yisrael, where is Rabbi Lipkin? And they find him rocking the baby who was crying. That is a story. Same story of Shmuel Belkin, remember? When a Talmud came to his house, he helped him put his coat on, his jacket on, when he was ready to leave. And they said to Rav Shmuel, you're the Rebbe, this is a Talmud. And Rabbi Belkin answered, when I put on my jacket, I get no mitzvah. When I help a Talmud help someone else put on their jacket, I'm doing the gemilat chesed. This is Musa. This is a different world, a different world. It's unfortunately beyond our comprehension today because we've gone so much off the path. But this is Musa. And then number three, Al Kol Adam Musari Lefateach Bekirbo Et Regesh Ahakshava Hapanimit Fahamochit. Zot omeret lo sagi b'shmi estamit shtetchid kim b'hakshavam rukezet v'tochit. And of course, what what the Mashgiach is saying. We have an attitude. We're learning Gemara, learning a sukkah. We're learning the longest. Yeish Shalom Midat. Take any sukkah, take the sukkah we spoke about yesterday in class. Mind Shindlehem Sola, any sugi of Lamdis, we're overjoyed. In many yeshiva, for instance, they skip the Agata. But the Rav Lesson is saying here that when we learn, we have to listen, we have to think, we have to comprehend. What is it saying to us? What is it telling us? How is it speaking to us? How does it empower us? How does it it adds to our spiritual being. And in that respect, could very well be that the Agada is more important than the sugyas of Halacha. Could very well be that we stand to learn more from the Agada. Halacha is Halacha, but how many of us are going to be involved with a question of Shoshanaga Chatapara? How many of us are going to be involved with the question of Baim Shenglin himself? But when it comes to Agada, Agada is the human being, human existence, human experience, human challenges. And we have to have an ear that's ready to listen, ready to comprehend. All right, at the end of the introduction, he thanks Slabodka, he thanks Adonainu Morenu V'Rabbeinu Hasaba HaKadisha Gon V'Atzadik Yisol Olam. Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel, Zeichet Tzadik V'Bracha, he was my Rebbe. He taught me what I know. He introduced me to the world of Musa, the world of Reb Yisrael Salanta, the world of Reb Simcha Zissel Mikelm, the world of Reb Yitzchak Blaza, who is known as Reb Itzla Petersburger. And I owe so much to my Rebbe. And then at the end, a Baal Musa doesn't forget who pays his salary. V'elu yamdu ha-bracha ha-rabanim ha-golnim rashei yeshivat Reb Yitzchak Olchanan u'menahalecha, that I am privileged to be the Mashgiach Ruchani there, and because of our wonderful relationship with the faculty and their relationship with me, it has allowed me to have influence on so many students. B'ni ha-yakar Reb Yisrael Meir Nero Yira Rav B'New York. He was a rabbi in New York. I don't know about all his children, but he has a son who is a world-famous hand surgeon, lives on the coast, and that son dedicates himself, the charity he established, to support those Gentiles in Lithuania who saved Jews during the Holocaust. And about 20 years ago, he visited the Kollel. It's long before we taught in this room. It was when the other half downstairs was still not, it was not rebuilt today to accommodate. It was not the Abraham program yet. It was two classrooms there. I taught in one, the Chamalevich taught in the other one. And in that classroom, I remember like yesterday, we had a whole ceremony where he gave me copies of his grandfather's smichot from Europe. I have them in my files. And I gave him a copy of the smicha that his grandfather gave me. It was a very moving moment. V'chatni kavni, it's a rabbinic expression, kvod harav Rabbi Avigdor Miller, bilifnim rav b'Chelsea, Massachusetts, v'ka'et menahal ruchani b'metifta Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin, Brooklyn. V'reyato, his wife Hayakara, Zubiti, Chana Etel, Ubenehem, Yivarchu Kulam, May Hashem Hatov. So this gives you a little feeling of who Rav Lesson was, what he published, what he wrote about. Let me go one step further. Drop of water to wet the vocal cords. And you should know it's a big shiloh whether I have to make a bracha, or I'm allowed to make a bracha. What am I drinking the water for? To wet the vocal cords? No bracha needed. says, but it's a shaila, so I'm going to be mechavim to enjoy the water I'm drinking, that solves the problem. If I had a bottle of scotch, it wouldn't be a problem. But then I couldn't continue teaching. Maybe we should settle on a bottle of diet of, what's it called? Zero Coke. Okay. Gentlemen, the Rebbe got his head chopped off, and the Rebbe is happy to admit he deserved to have his head chopped off. And my source, my good friend, Rabbi Nathan Kamenetsky, making of a gadol the improved edition I'm quoting from, but it's the same in the first edition. And I'll tell you what it's about. It begins on page 502 and carries through. And Nesson Kamenetsky quotes from Gil Klapman's book on Yeshiva University, which I've quoted in class. And he quotes from my work, Bernard Revel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy. Now, I make the claim, and Gil Klapman makes it very briefly, but I make the claim and go into more detail that Yeshiva Shel Chanan was a Musa Yeshiva. And what is my proof? I state that the Mashgiach of the Yeshiva was Rabbi Yehuda Weil. Rabbi Yehuda Weil, who I didn't know personally, but in my time, he died in 1944. He was at the yeshiva from 21 when he arrived in America until his demise in 1944. I still heard about Rabbi Yehuda Weil when I came into the yeshiva. He was a short little man. Everyone referred to him as the Chafetz Chaim of America. And our Chafetz Chaim, and in variations on this theme by Rabbi Rakefin, he was called, quote, the small Chafetz Chaim. Dr. Shmuel Belkin, the Chafetz Chaim of America, who never raised his voice, and that when he saw a boy with a hole in his shoe, he would slip him a dot. That's Rabbi Belkin, who knew Rabbi Yehuda Weil. So I made the claim that, why you? And then afterwards, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Lesson comes. But Rabbi Revel had established the yeshiva as a Musa yeshiva. And then I add as a proof that Rabbi Revel wrote his master's thesis on Rabbi Huden Ibn Bakuda, the author on the Chovat HaLevava. So the Chovat HaLevava is one of the classic Musa Sfarim. So Rabbi Kanetsky chops my head off, and he's basically right. He says, Rakefet is confusing what the title Mashgiach meant and means. In old Velazhin, and he quotes the Chafetz Chaim's family, since he was a relative of the Chafetz Chaim, he was the Mashgiach of the yeshiva during the time already of Rabitzel, some say even when Reb Chaim Velazhin was alive. What was the Mashgiach's job? The Mashgiach's job was, it wasn't to give Musa. It was to see that the yeshiva functioned. The Mashgiach's job was like George Finkelstein, coming around to the classes, taking attendance, and reporting to Mr. Abrams who was cutting. At one time in the yeshiva, there always was a big problem. I hope the problem doesn't exist today. How many kids went to Minyan? This was a problem. I have to tell you, in my time, we're talking about the kids in the dormitory. So at times they would have a mashgiach appointed to go up and down and write down who was at the minyan. Do they do that today, or today they're somewhat on the freedom of choice of the individual students? What
in
happens here?
Well, or in college?
College, I'm talking about.
On Shabbos, Yitzchak Cohen goes around in more concern.
Okay, say that. I hope on Shabbos no one has to check if a kid is coming to Minyan, but anything is possible. Okay, so that's the Mashgiach. So Reb Nesson says, yes, the yeshiva had a Mashgiach, but it was more a mashgiach in the sense who was there, who's not there. If you had a problem, you went over to the mashgiach. If you didn't have money for food, you went over to the mashgiach. That was his role. He was like a dean of students or a guidance counselor, put it that way. But Slabodka, what made Slabodka unique was that Slabodka had a mashgiach, the altar, who gave shmuasin, who gave hatsaot, lectures, who spoke about Musa, who had vaadim, but that would meet, the vaad that would meet, and the outstanding students, and they would have a private talk, and they would work on mita tovet. That was an entire new concept of Musa. It is therefore posited that only after Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen, a recognized Musarite, that's his word, was hired to deliver Musa talks on a rotating basis to each and every class in Reitz, could it be described as being a yeshiva that is favorable to the Musa system? Interesting. It's probably right. I use the term Musa Mashkiach. But what he's doing historically, he's cutting with a fine knife. There's a difference between the mashgiach we refer to in Voloshin or in Tells or in yeshivas before the Musa movement, before the altar of Slabodka, before Gadlut Adam. But why you becoming a real Musa yeshiva in that sense, 1944. Now, the Kamenetsky family has a special relationship with the mashgiach. Can anyone tell me why? Have you studied Making of a Gadol? Very fascinating. When Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky came to Slabodka, and we're talking, you know, before World War I, who welcomed him, took him into his room, taught him the ropes? An older student who was named Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen. So that Rav Lessen, as a student in Slabodka, who was older than Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, took him in and showed him around and taught him the ropes. So that there's a special relationship between Rav Yaakov and obviously his son Rav Nassim and Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen. In relation to what I said, he wrote his doctorate on the Musa movement, on Chovat HaLevavot, so that too is not necessarily a proof of Musa. It's only a proof that from a academic viewpoint, he was very interested in the Chovat HaLevavot. But he could see it academically, historically, socially, the concept of Musa in a practical sense. You could be interested in Chovat HaLevavot and not know what's going on in Slabodka. Zeluchud v'zeluchud. So I admit with glee and joy that Rav Nassim Kamenetsky has chopped my head off on this point. He is correct, and you have to just revise what I say slightly and understand Mashgiach before Rav Yehud the while and Mashgiach afterwards, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen. On page 588 of the same source, Rav Nassim Kamenetsky interviews Ethel Miller, and I'm now quoting her. She talks about her father. He was Rav. She lists out the cities in Lithuania, and he would travel every summer to the German resort town of Schwarzort in order to spend time with the Alta, who would also vacation there. So you see, his love, his Rebbe, was Rav Nutan Zvi Finkel, the love of being with the Alta. Rav Lessen escaped to the United States at the end of 39, served as Rav in Boston until the end of 44, when he was invited to become the Mashgiach in Yeshivas of Shalchanan, on the recommendation of Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, with whom he had become acquainted in Boston. Reb Nesson Kamenetsky quotes another person, Reb Gershon Kreiser, who also knew Reb Lesson, and I'm quoting Reb Gershon Kreiser. Reb Lesson was a true Mussarite, an extraordinary, munificent person, Baal Chesed, who would run to the end of the world to do a favor, and even on behalf of his opponents in his shtetl in Lithuania, he was a very grateful individual. If someone spoke against his employer, Dr. Belkin, president of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Lesson would contradict him fiercely. So you see, all these descriptions of Rav Lesson give us the same personality. Let me just give me 1 second. I just want to finish and then I'll open it. Give me 1 second. My dear students, I write about this in Washington. I've spoken about it in class many times. I just want to put it into context, because it had a tremendous impact on my life, the way I've tried to develop my own humble personality. And I just repeat it here, you can get the details in Washington, but I can never forget that Yom Kippur in our private minyan with the Mashkiach, a yeshivish minyan in what was then Bernard Revel Graduate School, a little building that no longer stands across the street from the yeshiva. And how a Rosh Yeshiva, when Rav Lesson is speaking before Ne'ilah, and he says, "Kuk nishtan de zege, don't look at your watch. We are netzach on Yom Kippur. We're part of, we're like an angel. We don't eat, we don't drink. We're angels. It's eternal. Don't leave eternity so quickly." And a Rosh Yeshiva starts yelling at him, "How can you say that? People are fasting. We have to look at the watch. We have to finish in time." And I was flabbergasted, I was shocked. Here is the Mashkiach and being cut off and yelled at in public. And I mentioned that I write, and it's happened, and it's true. Many months later, the Mashkiach came to me, "Chdafmet Eichreit, and I have to ask you something, can you step outside the Beis Medrash?" I had made a shidduch a few months early. He came to me and asked me about this person who Beis Yaakov early had, and I made some talk to this fellow in the Beis Medrash, and Baruch Hashem, they got married, and it's about 60 years later, I believe they're still married happily, Baruch Hashem. So the Mashkiach came to me, and he starts telling me about this girl, and like nothing else in the world matters except finding a shidduch for her. And who is the girl? The daughter of the Rosh Yeshiva who cut him off in public on Yom Kippur. And finally, Achron Chaviv. Yomo, how does Hebrew University benefit from Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Reb Cohen lesson? Even you do not know this. You have a world of knowledge, but this is lacking. At Hebrew University, from a very famous rabbinic family, a young man named Shlomo Tikhachinsky. Recognize the last name? Rabbi Chil Michal. A young man named Shlomo Tukachinsky completed a doctorate about 5 years ago. Yeshiva Tamusa, Me'litel Eretz Yisrael, Yeshiva Tzlabatka, Aliyata Ve'hitbasasuta Be'Eretz Yisrael Hamandatorit. The English title, an official title, the Musa Yeshiva from Lithuania to Israel, Slabatki Yeshiva, her immigration and establishment in the Mandate of Palestine. And someone printed out for me this doctorate, and I can tell you, no one is more widely quoted than the Svarim of Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Reb Cohen Lesson in trying to understand what Slabatka and Chevron were all about. All the Svarim of Rav Lesson, this Dr. Tukachinsky, new backwards and forwards. My dear students, Zekeli v'Anvehu. This was Rabbi Yaakov Moshe, a Cohen lesson. His life, his sojourn in America in the 20s, the Holocaust, His daughter survives, his son-in-law, Rav Avigdor Miller, Musa, what it's all about, his publications, PhD, Hebrew U. Some of the correspondence, Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, if you recall, told us to Shashi, I am very familiar with matzah pizzas. For logistical reasons, at our federal prison, we often give the Jewish inmates boxes of matzah during the year for Rekhomishner on Shabbat. I have gotten complaints from unit officers that inmates may be selling them and reports that inmates were using them for making pizzas in the unit microwaves. I hear less complaints now that the commissary sells inmates tortillas. So in other words, they were using the matzah as tortillas. Chaim Schnitzer, it's amazing what you can come up with on the websites. He sent me an article from the Montreal Canadian Jewish Chronicle, November 30th, 1928, that Rabbi Shkup has arrived on the ship. He gives the name of the ship, tells who Rabbi Shkup is, and he came to America to raise funds for Grodno, and that's when YU grabs him, and he becomes a Rebbe in YU for that year, till Rav Moshe Soloveitchik arrives. From the Montreal Torah Journal of Yeshiva Merkaz HaTorah, Chaim Schnitzer sends me advertisements that appeared, and I learned something I never knew. Here is an ad by Rebbe Chazan of Mazel Tov to Reb Moshe Feinstein and Reb Yeruchim Gerelick being appointed Rashi Yeshiva in Misifta Teferet Yerushalayim. So it's interesting, Reb Gerelick left afterwards, but Reb Moshe remained, and the rest is history. Anyone interested, I showed this yesterday. It's very fascinating. This is also from Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, Lieutenant Colonel, I believe is his rank. Vidal candy. And I looked at the candy, and it says gelatin. And it has hashgacha from London. It's made in Spain. It's sold in Israel, exported from Israel to America. Is the gelatin edible? Is it the gelatin of machloket? And here is the whole correspondence. The gelatin, Israel today only allows fish gelatin or the gelatin from glatt kosher slaughtered animals, which is also considered parva. Very interesting correspondence. Any Chabotnik here? Where is Alex? What's going on? Governor Mario Cuomo. Am I pronouncing that? How do they pronounce it? Cuomo. I can't hear.
Cuomo.
That's too hard for me. Cuomo. Here is his relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Very fascinating. He evidently was a very fine person. Here is from Chabad. Anyone who's do me a favor. If there's no Chabadnik here, take it for Alex. These are letters in the Rebbe's handwriting on various topics. Unbelievable. This one is not even signed, though it's signed on the next page. One of the topics is about on behalf of my friend, regarding the new drug called LSD, which is said to have the propriety of mental stimulation, etc. We'll see what the Rebbe has to say on that. Also, this is the Nishmat letter about what they're doing, Rabbanit Hanam Henkin, and very fascinating. It opened my eyes, and I got an idea from this that I'm going to roll down the hill in Boca, Be'ezrat Hashem, and let's see how it plays throughout the world, whether they declare me a genius or put me in the program. Okay, but the idea came from that issue. Next week and the week afterwards, I'm in Florida to enjoy the weather, but I won't have much time. I'm going to be working very hard, so I have to be honest. The shayurim and going to Florida came before the concept of enjoying the weather while it snows here. I'll be walking without a jacket midday, I hope, this coming Wednesday. At least the weather right now seems to be that way in Florida. And I'm gone 2 weeks. So 3 weeks from today, 3 weeks from yesterday, I believe it's the 25th and the 26th of January, Shir starts up again. I hope lekavod ulatiferet. I want to thank you all for your participation. And Yitzchak, you wanted to ask something.
Oh, no, I wanted to ask Rabbi Leo Young, who used to teach at Yeshiva
College. Of course.
So he had a course on ethics and morality.
Right.
Now, what he had, the distinction he made between ethics and morality gives the definition of Musar, actually. Because he said ethics is how a person relates to other people. Uh-huh. And morality is how does a person relate to himself.
Ethics, how a person relates to other people, and morality, how a person relates to himself.
Now, when we come now to the whole issue of Musa,
right.
Musa is not only it is also how a person sees himself.
Right, the introspection. That's right, that's exactly. Exactly.
Or humility.
Right, right.
See,
right. Right.
All of this was Leo Young's attempt, I think, to express it.
Okay, very beautiful what you said, morality and ethics, and it parallels what we just quoted from the Mashkiach. I want to mention that for the Monday class, beginning after we come back, Be'ezrat Hashem, you are required to come to class with the Gartel, and you will understand very well, and we can keep the Gartel on the rest of the year, Be'ezrat Hashem. Those of you that have spudiks or strimals, you can wear them as well. If it's cold enough, I'll wear my spudik, but wear it without the cold, it's oppressive. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Thank you very, very much. Dar Chassidus.
Rabbi, my cousin is a... cousin is a Rav in Boca.
Yeah. So which cousin? One second.
Okay.
Who's your cousin?
Philip Maskos.
But he's not in the big shoe. Yeah,
he's the assistant rabbi.
Ah, he's the assistant rabbi. So tell him to say hello. Tell him to say hello.
I'm wondering if I get take a picture of that mother-in-law document that you have.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. I think it was at the back.
Yeah.
Can I take a look at that one again?
You're going to be in Hollywood for sure. You're welcome.
I'll
be in Hollywood too. When do you fly? You flying through Europe?
No. I'm flying through New York. Allow. I'm on an LL flight, but it's not one direct flight. It's, yeah.
You ever see this, Jeremy? Okay, so I was flipping through, and basically I'll tell you the Hakama. You know what they did? They found in some guy in Israel, he was like cleaning out his attic, and he found this box there, and there was some yeshiva bachur. This came out about 7 years ago.
Wow.
Some yeshiva bachur came and he found manuscripts. He went around to all the yeshiva in Europe. That's what I wanted to show to Rabbi. I never saw anything from him. I never heard of it, and I
there
know
is
who
one
he was.
Sefer came out as son of a publisher.
You see a Torah.
Did Rav Levson speak English?
I never spoke English to him. I can't. I doubt it.
I
mean, he probably spoke a broken few words.
Yeshkoyach and Joy, have a good trip.
May God's home.
Thank you.
So you're back. We have to get
together. We have to
work it out. We have to work it out. But what can I tell you? Life is here. Okay.
What?
There's never a dull moment.
My wife's family is in
Hollywood. You was with your Wasserman. You go Wasserman. Remember?